Pat, I want to say to you tonight, in my final speech before the conclusion of this debate, that I again appreciate you for agreeing to participate in this discussion. I'm very thankful for that, and I want to say and reiterate, as I did in my very first affirmative speech, that I appreciate your kind demeanor and the attempt that you make to answer arguments that are made. We just debated, or just moderated a debate against one of your brethren in Arkansas. And we and most of our people felt that he was very dishonest in his approach with us and approaching the argumentation that we presented, and the entire way that he approached the discussion seemed to us to be very dishonest. Both Jason Weatherly and I, which both Pat and Tommy has debated, emailed Pat, and Tommy may have even seen the email, and we agreed that both Pat and Tommy do an excellent job of interacting and exchanging arguments with the debater. And we want you to know tonight, we appreciate your efforts and what you do to make the exchange honest, and what you do to make the exchange interesting, and the attempts that you make to answer the arguments. We appreciate that so very much. And I am doing the best that I can within my ability to do the same thing for Pat as well in this discussion. Now, as you have noticed, probably most of the argumentation tonight has actually flipped to where I'm responding to most of his arguments, and more time has spent on me answering material that he presented in defense of his views. So it would probably have been much easier if the proposition would have been that Pat was affirming that Jesus could have sinned and me simply deny that proposition. Such is not the case this evening. And so we will continue to do what we are doing at this point. And so let me say here, in reference to the word if thou be the Son of God, in Matthew chapter 4 in the wilderness temptation. And he didn't answer it in the speech immediately following the speech I made the argument in, but he made it in his last speech, and I appreciate that. My argument was not on the word if. My argument was on the phrase, if thou be the Son of God. I don't deny that the word if can sometimes mean sense. What my argument was is that the phrase, if thou be the Son of God, always is from the state of unbelief. And I gave you the scriptures. That's what you should have responded to. The scriptures that had the phrase in it, not just the word if, but my verses that had the phrase, if thou be the Son of God. That, to really answer the argument and respond appropriately to the argument I made, you wouldn't have just answered the word if, you would have answered the phrase, if thou be the Son of God, because that was the argument that I made. And without exception, if thou be the Son of God is always from a position of unbelief. Not just the word if, but if thou be the Son of God, that is always from a position of unbelief. And if he can show me one place where if thou be the Son of God means, since you are the Son of God, and that's what the person that said it understood it to be, then you may have appropriately responded to the argument. You may do it in your last speech. I welcome you to do that. There would be no point of order called if you do that. But the point is, you responded simply to the word if, and not the phrase that I made the argument on, and that was, if you be the Son of God. It is never one time used from a place of faith and understanding and acceptance of Christ as the Son of God. It is always and without exception. And to say that it's used any other way in Matthew chapter 4 is to go beyond the way the phrase and the term is used in Scripture. Now, he did agree again that in order to be tempted, you would have to have desire. He agreed with my position. He said, I agree with John that desire is necessary in order to be tempted. Now notice what he said Jesus had desire for. He had natural desire for a woman just like any other man. I agree. Natural desire for a woman isn't a sin. But tempted means that you are tempted to sin. Tempted for a sin. If you are tempted for a sin or by a sin, you have to have desire for it. You agree Jesus never had a desire for homosexuality, therefore he was never tempted like the person who has desire for homosexuality is tempted. And that's the point that you cannot answer from Hebrews 4:15. It does not say he was tempted like we are, but in the points like we are, categorically, I showed that. Okay, let's put it this way. Let's put it in this context and understand it like that. Hebrews 4:15 and Hebrews 2:17 and 18 must be understood in the only example of temptation that we have in the New Testament. The only example of Jesus being tempted is in the wilderness. I think Pat will agree with that. I think all of you in this audience will agree with that. Now, the point that Pat made is that he has to experience each temptation in the way we do. He said that's what Hebrews 4:15. Yes, you did. You said each one of them in the same likeness. You gave the translation from the parallel Bible, that it had to be each temptation the way we are tempted with it. He has to be tempted in each one of them the way we're tempted with it. That's what he said Hebrews 4:15 teaches. That is not the case. The only example of Jesus being tempted is in the wilderness temptation. Where was Jesus tempted with homosexuality in the wilderness? Where was Jesus tempted with lying in the wilderness? Where was Jesus tempted with fornication in the wilderness? He wasn't tempted in each temptation. He was tempted categorically the way we are. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. So therefore, he was not tempted the way we are tempted in each temptation. And each one the way we are. He admits desire is necessary for temptation. He never desired homosexuality. Therefore, he was never tempted by homosexuality. He never desired to lie. Therefore, he was never tempted to lie. He never desired to commit fornication. Therefore, he was never tempted to commit fornication. He never desired to commit adultery. Therefore, he was never tempted to commit adultery. He never desired to commit bestiality. Therefore, he was never tempted to commit bestiality because he admitted that the desire is necessary for the temptation, and if he never desired it, he was never tempted with it. And so his point at Hebrews 4:15 is exactly wrong. He was not tempted the way we are. And that is the whole crux of this matter. That is the whole point of this debate. For Jesus to be able to have sinned, he would have had to have been tempted the way we are tempted. I have proven from Hebrews 4:15 and the application of this text, he was not tempted the way we are tempted. Pat admits he wasn't tempted the way we are tempted because he never desired homosexuality. Therefore, he can never be tempted by homosexuality because he admitted the desire is necessary for the temptation. Now you can understand that. You can understand that argument. He admitted that you have to have the desire for it in order for it to be a temptation. James 1:14 says, every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own desires and enticed. He admits the only desire Jesus had was a desire for a woman. That's not a sin. Therefore, that ain't the kind of desire that he's talking about in James 1:14. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own desire. Own desire for what? Own desire for the temptation. The thing that he's tempted with. What is he tempted with in the text? He's tempted with sin. He never desired homosexuality. Therefore, he was never tempted by homosexuality because the person who is tempted by it desires it. Jesus never desired it. Therefore, he wasn't tempted by it the way the person is who is tempted with homosexuality. Again, my point stands that Jesus was not tempted the way we are. He was tempted in the categories and the areas that we are. The lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. Now, he said, if Hebrews 10:28 has said that you had compassion on me because you were in bonds the way I was in bonds, that it would mean an equality in experience. Well, Hebrews 4:15 doesn't say that he can be touched with the feelings of our infirmities because he was tempted the way we are. It's not what it said. It said he was touched with the feelings of our infirmities And he was tempted in all points, like as we are. My point still stands in this text. If you can understand how that they did not have an equality of experience in Hebrews 10:34, yet could still sympathize with Paul, even though they had not experienced what Paul had experienced, then you can understand how Jesus, be in touch with the feelings of our infirmities, can sympathize with us because He was a man. He felt what we felt when we were tempted. But because He was God, He could not yield to those temptations. He feels our temptation. He feels our infirmity. He could never have our infirmity, but He could be touched by the feelings of our infirmity. Let's talk about Hebrews chapter 2 again. Give me chart number 80. Let me go through this again. You know what? Since I haven't answered Hebrews chapter 5 and verse number 7 yet in this discussion, let me talk about that. And if I have any time left, we will talk about Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 18 again. Hebrews chapter 5 and verse number 8, I'm sorry, is the verse he made the argument on. Give me chart number 66. Okay. Now these 15-minute speeches are short, Pat. We should have did 3:20s. 15 minutes is not a lot of time to respond to everything that you need to respond to. But what I'm endeavoring to do here is answer the things that he set forth that I have not yet answered in the debate. And so that's what I'm doing here. Hebrews 5:8. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And Pat says that was not Jesus' temptation the way he learned obedience? No, because the way he learned obedience in this text is not in reference to sin. Pat has to prove that Hebrews 5:8 is talking about in reference to sin. He learned obedience in reference to choosing whether or not to commit fornication or homosexuality, which, by the way, he was never tempted in because he never felt it or he never desired it. All right, the next chart, 67, I'm going to show you how he learned obedience. It was not in reference to sin. The way he learned obedience, Hebrews 5:7, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplication with strong crying and tears unto him that was what? Able to save him from death. Now the context of this is in reference to the death of Christ. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience through the things which he suffered. How did Christ learn obedience through what he suffered? Hebrews 2:9. But we see Jesus how? For the suffering of death, that he may taste death for every man, and made the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. What is the context of the suffering that he learned obedience in Hebrews 5:8? To save him from death. What was his suffering that he learned obedience in? Hebrews 2:9 and 10. For the suffering of death. Next chart. Go to the next chart. I'll go ahead and I may come back to this or may not. Next chart. How do I know that the obedience for the suffering was the suffering of death? Because not only the context of Hebrews 5:7, to save him from death, he learned obedience by the things which he suffered, Hebrews 2:9, for the suffering of death. But how do I know that that suffering of death is the obedience? Philippians 2:8, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. What was the suffering that he learned obedience? He learned obedience, becoming obedient unto the death of the cross. And that is where he learned obedience through suffering, when he suffered on the cross and became obedient unto death. The issue of Hebrews 5:7 is not him needing to learn obedience and whether or not to commit fornication, homosexuality, or any of the other sins that we have listed in the discussion tonight. The way he learned obedience was he became obedient unto death. Learned obedience through suffering. What was that suffering? The suffering of death. Hebrews 2 and verse 9. So the obedience that he learned through suffering was becoming obedient to the cross of suffering in which he died. Now I believe that that adequately answers Hebrews chapter 5 and verse number 7. I have less than 1 minute left. And so I want to review, I want to go back again and make my original point on Hebrews chapter or on James chapter 1, verse number 14. He agrees that desire is necessary to be tempted. You have to have a desire for it to be tempted by it. Jesus never had a desire for homosexuality, therefore he was never tempted by it. He never had a desire to lie, therefore he was never tempted to lie, because the desire is necessary in order for it to be a temptation. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his desires. Desire for what? Desire for the thing in which he is tempted, namely sin. And one more time, Pat, I would like to say thank you for having this discussion, this debate with me. I think you've done a very good job tonight. And thank you to the audience for coming out and listening to both sides of the debate. We appreciate you coming to be with us very much.